News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage. In association with AIR.
And Owen Reedy, who is General Secretary of ICTU, is with us to look at some of the stories you may not have seen and to give a bit of analysis of those you have. And ironically, as Laura was talking, Owen turned his phone round to show me the picture on his home screen.
Be nice to the Leon Burgers, Anton. They're a wonderful breed. I have two of them.
You have two Leon Burgers?
Two beasts, 62 kilos each.
Oh, mother of God. Have you worked out the sheer quantity by weight of poo that you have to shovel in a given year?
Listen, I'm doing it. Two bags, two hands, but they're wonderful.
They're a lovely breed of dog. They're a lovely, big, gentle, easygoing animal. But beautiful. My God, they're large. Anyway, we didn't ask you, nice as it is to have you in talking about Leon Burgers. Let's start with matters that are of slightly broader importance. Half of the rooms at the National Children's Hospital are unfinished. And again, we have a spat between BAM and the Minister for Health.
Yeah, this perennial debate in Ireland, we just can't seem to do infrastructure. Over 55% of the rooms are not available. And it seems BAM have the state over a barrel, Anton. The Minister for Health is talking tough, but I mean, she's running out of road. I think people are going to get fed up with this soon. There's a generation of kids that are going to miss out on this. And I wonder why we just can't seem to do it in Ireland. Like, I look at the Spanish, they can build, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's roads, but we cannot do it. And I don't know if it's to do with our procurement.
Well, is it a broad problem or is it specific to the hospital? Because, I mean, if you look at the leap from the mid-90s to now in terms of motorway construction, it is exponential, the increase. We built the Dublin Port Tunnel without vast problems, though there was some objection, we got it done. So we can point to infrastructure that we have successfully pulled off. We just seem to have made a thundering hames of it with the Children's Hospital.
Yeah, and Terminal 2, which is huge. I mean, anyone who goes through Dublin Airport, if we didn't have Terminal 2, we'd all be in bother. I'd love to know, though, and I'd love to look back on what was the cost that was procured for, that was tendered for, and what we ultimately paid and what the timelines were. It seems to me in Ireland we go for the lowest cost. We don't build in these other issues. And BAM, I mean, their reputation obviously is suffering, but they're brazened about this and brass-necked, and their attitude is we're in the right, and it seems the government can't even put any kind of penalties on them. Now, I'm sure they will not get any public procurement in the future, I would imagine, but it's a sorry
state. Well, you'd wonder, because I assume what BAM, and I mean, reading between the lines in their statement, what BAM is saying is, you keep making design changes. Our contract is predicated on additional costs when you make a design change, and it takes time, so as long as you keep doing it, we have to keep charging it. That's the deal.
That's what they say. And again, you know, was any of this built into the procurement at the start? I worry about this because this whole thing, it leaks into the whole housing debate and the ineffectiveness of the state to be able to supply housing. And I think it's seen as a kind of a structural problem within our public service. It's a real problem.
And of course, the one thing that is missing then from this again is a final sign-off date, because the most recent date that we were given, I think, was the 30th of April, was that the final completion date. And that's when? That's Thursday? I don't think it's going to be open by Thursday.
Well, I think I remember Leo Varadkar saying that, you know, if the Children's Hospital isn't open by a certain date, like, the stars will fall in. I mean, and look at Leo Varadkar now. He's well out of politics. So I think people are cynical about it, but frustrated. But it's a wider malaise. It's a bigger problem.
Meanwhile, across the water, the flight has landed carrying King Charles and Queen Camilla for the state visit to the US. Security, obviously, at the forefront of everybody's mind, given what happened at the White House correspondence dinner. Everything seems to be going relatively safely so far.
Yeah, I have to say, I am not one of those Irish people who have a very unhealthy interest in the British royal family. I'm not a monarchist, but if people want a monarchy, that's fine. But you have to feel sorry for the couple here to be forced to go over and indulge this narcissist big baby as the latest kind of British diplomacy after Trump has wiped the floor with Starmer. It's really tragic. I see Melania is taking them to the beehive, and the King and the Queen have a keen interest in that. I would love to hear the small talk. I'd say it's like an episode of Callan's Kicks or something like that. But on a serious note, obviously Trump's security has to be reviewed after what took place the weekend. And I would imagine this guy's an incredibly difficult fella to manage for the security, because he's so unpredictable and he is addicted, it seems, to attention. And I think if you put that mix in, you know, it must be a real hard fella to try and keep trails and tracks on.
Whatever about being having a latent interest in the royal family, what do you think of the task ahead of the royals in this week? Because that special relationship that always existed between the UK and the US, I think it's fair to say it has been more damaged in the last year than it has been in the preceding 50 years. Can they get all of that back into the bottle?
I don't think so. And I don't think whoever comes after Trump, even if it's a Democrat, that it's going to go back to the way things were with any of us, with Europe, with all of the so-called allies. Trump has changed the narrative. He's changed the game and he's changed the rules of engagement. And he has brought America to a place where it's an unpredictable partner in so many different ways. And I think it will be a long, long time before that changes. Who knows what comes after Trump? I mean, Trump is a phenomenon, from my point of view, an outrageous phenomenon and an awful one inflicted on the world. But it's a movement and there will be someone after him. And this kind of America first. I mean, he's not even sticking to his plan of just staying in America and not being involved in these ridiculous illegal wars. So, no, I think that special relationship, I think the British people talk it up anyway. It's a post-colonial thing. Britain is not what it once was.
At home, news that the hospital stays for laughing gas abuse is on the rise. This is nitrous oxide, and the sort of the gas and air common in baby in maternity wards. It's also the little silver vials that you see scattered around the town after any half decent sunny evening, and particularly young people now getting hospitalised en masse for it.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had it, but I know my son had it once in Temple Street Hospital. I remember being there. Concerned to see that it's used for car engine performance. You're a big car enthusiast.
Yeah,
that scares the life out of me.
Yeah.
I don't want to be inhaling anything that's used for car engine. But I don't want to reopen the urban-rural debate that's raged. But it's no surprise to me that the majority of these people are young males from Dublin. We rednecks would not be as foolish or as silly, quite frankly. But on a serious note, obviously people are staying up to 8 days in hospital. I mean, the hospitals don't need this nonsense. They're on average male. The mean age is 19. As I say, they're dubs, which is no surprise. But it's part of this whole social media obsession, you know, some Egypt ingesting laughing gas and putting it up on his TikTok. It's pretty
pathetic. I've been amazed, though, with the quantity. There are early mornings when you would come into Dublin, and if there has been an outdoor gathering, it is just, I mean, it looks like a snowfall of these little nitrous canisters. I mean, the sheer quantity of it that must be getting illegally imported is vast.
I have to say, I haven't come across it in rural Ireland. We must have a more sensible youth when it comes to this kind of thing, so...
Lastly, Gordon Ramsay is going to be bringing in a US-style 20% service charge in his restaurant. This is, if not a mandatory, you would have to say, excuse me, please take that back off my bill. You eat your 300 quid dinner in his posh restaurant and you get hit with an additional 20% when you go to pay.
Yeah, Gordon Ramsay's known as having a brass neck and he's made his career out of having a brass neck, and particularly the way he treats his staff, quite frankly, which is, from our point of view, outrageous and unacceptable. Let's just say that. But this is incredibly cheeky. I mean, I always make sure, even though it's the law now, when I'm tipping, particularly on the card, I always say to the staff, can you confirm to me that you get it? Because in some places they say they only get a part of it, even though it's...
Now, I always wonder, because I ask the same question, but I always wonder, do they tell you the truth? I mean, will management say, you better, if asked, this goes to you?
Well, there's an establishment in Dublin, which I won't name, that I went to of a certain Italian variety, where they told me they only got 50% of it. And I said, well, I won't tip for that reason and pass that on to your management and let them know it's actually illegal in this day and age. But this is pretty cheeky from Ramsay. And I would say the punters are afraid of maybe, you know, experiencing his wrath, maybe coming out of the kitchen.
But it seems to be more and more common, because there was as part of some of the coverage on it, they went through some of the other big name chefs in the UK particularly. And a lot of them are tacking on 12.5%, 15%. You could understand it if it was just built into the prices of the dishes. But this is, there's menu pricing and then there is a mandatory additional payment.
But I think even in most restaurants in Dublin, if you go out with more than 8 or 10 people, they will put on a service charge of 10%. I see Marco Pierre White is 10. Rick Stein, who I think was a great chef, is 12.5%. But 20% is a bit cheeky. And, you know, I think it's important to tip, but I think people should have some discretion as to what that tip should be.
Owen, thank you very much. Owen Reedy, General Secretary of the ICTU.
News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage. In association with AIR. Weekday mornings at 7. News Talk. Conversation that counts.